I'm Valerie Tavary.
And I'm Angel Nevarez.
The work we produce for Manifesta 8 is titled What We Might.
Bueno, pues Manifesta 8 está ya abierta al público y esta Bienal Europea del Arte Contemporáneo.
Da Murcia e Cartagena, lo speciale di Radio Papesse. Manifesta 8.
Jenna. Where are you going? And then the running is so funny, huh? It's like there's an urgency.
In un parco giochi pieno di bambini, abbiamo incontrato Valerie Tavary e Angel Nevarez. Insieme abbiamo parlato di arte radiofonica, percezione, di mondi immaginati e del loro lavoro presentato a Manifesta 8, una pièce di radioteatro.
What We Might Have Heard in the Future. It's a radio theater piece that focuses on voice identification systems and, you know, the possibility of difference being noted through the voice in the future rather than through one's visual appearance.
No se puede reconocer el ritmo respiratorio, reducir el número de inhalaciones.
Yeah, and I would add that it's a science fiction drama that also deals at the same time issues around verification. And we wanted to work on this specifically because it is a radio piece that was performed live. So we were thinking that it would be interesting to focus on the voice and on speech because of the format.
Patrón de voz inoperable. Incrementar la modulación laríngea.
So voice verification, it's a science fiction drama. We were really interested in this idea of a protagonist trying to gain access to a space. The space isn't entirely defined. We understand that there is a space that is an interior that that people within this space have access to something that the protagonist does not. And so throughout the radio piece, she is trying to break the code of the voice verification system and working with a computer who is telling her what she needs to change or how she needs to alter her voice in order to eventually gain access.
Ahora, la tecnología de reconocimiento de voz controla el flujo del intercambio social. Los interlocutores de la ciudadela controlan el orden social, además de los muy limitados recursos esenciales para vivir.
For a long time, well, when we first started working together, we focused a lot on a specific radio practice. So for a long time, we did work with radio, setting up temporary radio stations, experimenting with the idea of broadcast and transmission. We've always wanted to do a radio theater, but we never really had a chance until this time at Manifesta. I guess for us, we wanted to engage again with this idea of a piece being live. You know, what does it mean to be broadcasting live? You know, you can't edit your work. So there's a certain kind of performative element that's involved.
And it is kind of hearkening back to a traditional format of radio theater and thinking about how we might transform that tradition in the present moment, how we might use it or look at it once again as a possible viable form of artistic practice as well. And I think for us it's really interesting that we were invited to be here and produce a radio piece that would actually be broadcast on the local radio station so that the exhibition space, the radio space becomes an exhibition space and it engages the listeners of this particular radio station. I think for them, you know, it's quite avant-garde, I guess, to be working with artists and, you know, thinking differently about the programmatic possibilities of a traditional radio station.
Vamos a disfrutar a través de la radio de esta oferta de hoy, que es un tanto curiosa, que es eso de la pieza de radioteatro que recuperamos, ¿no? Tenemos allí al otro lado de la línea, en los micrófonos de Onda
Regional. Well, I think what is radio art is a good question. I mean, I don't think we've mastered any tool, you know, through this process of working with radio.
I think it's more about an understanding of of radio space and of the idea of broadcast transmission, the liveness of it, and how a work can function within these realms as well. And I think those are the things that we were thinking about with this. We had very good technicians who were a part of the local radio station who master the technique of the broadcast. And Angel and I, because we've done a number of broadcast projects, especially pieces that were local and micro broadcast and pirate broadcast as well, you know, we understand how to produce, you know, the transmission, how to, in a sense, you know, throw one's voice from one space to another using technological means, right? And I think that's interesting because it creates another space entirely. We've always been interested in radio space as another form of public space, as a discursive space. It's, you know, it's a kind of non-space, but it's accessing the airwaves, the airspace that's around us. It's utilizing that space to produce some sort of discursivity or dialogue or conversation.
Este sistema tan avanzado se basa en la excepcional geometría del tracto vocal del hablante. Puede marcar diferencias lingüísticas al máximo.
For this particular piece, the voice is the protagonist, right? And the transformation of the voice, it is central to that piece. Also, there were 10 voices, 10 different voices, and 3 actors playing 10 voices. That in itself becomes interesting because the voice becomes a protagonist within, is the protagonist, but then the voice is transformed through the individual actors, each of them playing a number of different roles, which might not be as obvious when you're seeing the piece, the visual piece, but it becomes more obvious as you're hearing it. Of course, the audience, the live performance, was able to both hear and see the production of the piece. But I think it's a different thing, right, than if you're only listening. I think when you have the visual in front of you, the focus might be more on the actors and how the actors are gesticulating or how the piece is being conducted, whatever that may be. And so maybe certain nuances and fluctuations in the voice might not be recognized as easily as they would if you're listening. And I think, you know, radio space is an imaginary space. It's an imaginative space and perhaps an imaginary space. And so we build the visual based on the sound that we're hearing, and I think that that's very different.
Yeah, just this idea that, you know, you're not seeing the person that's performing, so the person can take on many, many different characters. But it really is an interesting way that, you know, thinking about shifting of the voice and how you can maybe be someone else just through that modification, that simple modification. And I think that can only be possible through a medium such as radio because of its, relationship between, I guess, the technology and how we receive it as a listener.
The narrative is quite disjunct. It isn't. There are certain pieces missing in the narrative, and I think that's purposeful. For us, in order to possibly open up other possibilities for the listeners. So while the stage is set, in a sense, by the narrator, in the future, this citadel, this town, there's an interior space, there's an exterior space. People inside have a certain kind of voice, and their voice operates in a certain way so that they can actually enter this space. We don't know what the importance of being in that space is, but that space is controlled, and perhaps, you know, it's the center space. It's the central space, and people on the periphery do not have access unless they have a certain kind of voice. So their movement is not as possible. And I think these themes are very much related to the ideas of movements of people and immigration and diaspora as well. And those were some of the themes that we were thinking about with this project, but we didn't want it to be so specific about a certain population and about a certain kind of difference other than it being reflection in one's voice. And I guess that kind of works also in relation to the idea of accents, you know, and issues around, especially in the U.S., you know, when people move to the U.S., there are classes that you can take that reduce your accent because one can be stigmatized because the way that they speak English in that circumstance, or perhaps here, the way that one speaks Spanish if they're not native to this region.
Just goes back to this idea of a science fiction narrative, a story that's possible maybe in the future. Now we cross borders using our passports, but in our narrative, the voice becomes the passport. And thinking now how certain ways of identifying people are used by you know, systems of power, photographs, fingerprints. They also use voice recognition. You were able to get into a space. For us, it was an interesting way to think about, you know, how to combine maybe the science fiction narrative, but have it be about the voice, considering its specificity to a radio broadcast.
Nuestra situación histórica no es fácil porque es dialéctica. Criticamos el lenguaje del status quo bajo su reinado.
Actually, people go to school. They train to speak a certain way. So there are communication courses in the universities that help potential broadcasters learn the intonation, learn the inflection of the voice for radio or for television. And it's interesting also if you think about it in relation to television also that you can note difference on television because you have a visual in front of you. You can note difference of appearance, of gender, etc. However, there's still this kind of leveling off of the voices. And sometimes it's quite odd to see, you know, perhaps a woman who has a voice similar to a man's voice on television. And that kind of training is very much a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, we did research a lot of science fiction theater, radio theater. A lot of it was, pieces that were done based on novels. A lot of it was, you know, people going to the moon or Martians coming to Earth, that kind of stuff.
These stories were about the fear of difference, the fear of the other as well, and maybe that becomes metaphoric.
Usamos la fuerza del lenguaje incluso cuando intentamos contrarrestar esa fuerza.
Incrementar los receptores de tono.
We also, you know, we were also very interested in linguistics as well and thinking about, you know, how the voice becomes and how language functions, right? How language can be violent as well. And so, you know, for instance, the main text, the main phrase that Parisia is using to enter the space is a quote from Judith Butler's Excitable Speech. We exercise the force of language even as we attempt to counter its force. So it's about using language to also fight against the power structure, in a sense. And we were really interested in that particular quote as being, you know, the text in which Parisia continues to repeat in different ways in order to perhaps enter that space, in order to counter the power structure of the citadel.
Usamos la fuerza del lenguaje incluso cuando intentamos contrarrestar esa fuerza.
Aclarar la cavidad esofágica.
Usamos la fuerza del lenguaje incluso cuando intentamos contrarrestar esa fuerza.
We use the power of language at the same time we work to counter its force. You know, Judith Butler was speaking about speech or the voice in the context of, you know, what happens when you call someone a derogatory name or a derogatory term. So at the same time, we use the voice to maybe ridicule someone. You know, the voice itself can be used to be counteractive.
So I guess in terms of, you know, thinking about ideas around the voice and the possible shifting of one's voice in order to gain access, but also how language functions as both a form of communication that can also be violent, can also hurt, can also function as power. And so we were looking at Judith Butler, we were looking at Foucault, Roland Barthes, Thomas Dolby being, you know, a pop musician from the 80s. But I think in quite a few pieces of ours, Angel and I have been really interested in mixing popular culture with, you know, more theoretical texts as well. Because I think Thomas Dolby, for us, is quite a smart and interesting musician. And the particular song that we were referencing is called Airwaves. And he was building a kind of noir-esque narrative with this particular song. And so we pulled a few lyrics from the song and made that into some of the dialogue as well.
And this, the project itself was kind of initiated by thinking of this song Airwaves by Thomas Dolby. The original idea was to maybe put this song into a more narrative structure and extend the what already exists in the song.
Exploding
the song, right. So maybe we'll save that idea for another project.
Brecht wrote this text that spoke about, you know, the possibility of radio being a form of two-way communication, and that, you know, in the early days, radios had the possibility, or the idea of the radio had the possibility to both, kind of like a telephone, both broadcast and receive. And I think that idea is quite interesting because, of course, radio, corporate radio, I would say, or contemporary radio even, doesn't do that, right? It's about, you know, the one voice broadcasting out to a mass. Of course, there are possibilities that exist, and, you know, groups were very interested in that Brechtian notion of two-way communication, so the telephone became very important to their radio broadcasts as well. However, if you're thinking about traditional radio, news radio, it is about, you know, the authoritative voice speaking to a mass, and I think that is a problematic of radio because you don't have the visual. The voice has a certain kind of authoritative power, which is quite problematic. Of course, we were thinking about these as we're writing this piece. That isn't particularly in there, but perhaps we're thinking about other possibilities of radio.
Well, I think today a lot more people are using radio. You know, if we're talking about maybe the art world, since we're a part of Manifesta, that there have been a trend, I would say, of people interested in broadcast and radio as another medium, as another tool, perhaps. Partly because I think it's, you know, maybe challenging this question of, has radio become outmoded or not? Is it still a viable tool now with the internet?
But we were primarily interested, initially when we started working with radio, of accessing the airwaves. We eventually did work with internet broadcast as well, but I think the idea of kind of garnering that space, you know, using minimal technology was quite interesting for us. But right, in terms of content, I think a lot of what artists are doing or sound artists are doing is more experimental, maybe less radio theater, maybe more experiments with sound and perhaps also what music could be. Other possibilities for music. Yeah,
I think there's a communal element that's involved with radio as well, where, You know, a lot of people use it as a form, you know, like what we were interested in. It's, you know, it's another platform. It's a discursive space. It's a way to engage various types of audience. It's still viable, I guess. Radio is still important.
That's a major statement.
Radio Papesse è un progetto a cura di Carol Haupt e Laria Gadens.
Pues esto que acabamos de oír, esto que acabamos de escuchar, era la obra que han compuesto Valerie Tevere y Ángel Nevares.
Radiopapesse.org.